So, this year, our First Unity theme is about sailing the seven seas together as a compassionate, courageous, contemplative, collaborative, connected, candid community. And today we end our mini-series on two books that really do support that journey. They are The Eye of the Storm, Embracing Conflict, Creating Peace, and The Eye of the Storm for Teens, Finding Peace in the Midst of Conflict by Unity Ministers Gary and Jane Simmons, respectively. Reverend Gary writes, "At the center of the hurricane is its eye." I'm so used to wearing this, I forget to take it off now. Sorry. "At the center of the hurricane is its eye, a single point in space where the forces of the storm are in perfect equilibrium. At the eye, there is peace, calm, and stillness." And so the eye of the storm represents our wholeness, our essential divine nature. At the circumference of the storms of our lives, the winds of confusion, misunderstanding, blame, and the need to be right blow with devastating ferocity. But the center is where we experience all storms from the peace we are. And just as a hurricane needs conditions to rise up, conditions such as temperature, wind velocity, and humidity, negative conditions in our consciousness contribute to stormy life conditions. The Simmons call these winds of conflict, and they have their origin in listening to our heads, our intellect, not our hearts. When we move to our heart space, that Christ center, we align with the wholeness and discover the power within. So we've reviewed these the last few weeks. I'm going to do a quick review of them. The first one is a sense of separation, thinking that we are separate from God and one another. From heart-centered wholeness, we realize that we are in what Jane Simmons calls communion, common union, oneness, unity with all that is. The second was misperception, allowing our beliefs to block what is really true. Our beliefs cloud our perceptions. And in our hearts, when we align with principle, that which is spiritually true, we see beyond appearances to a new reality. So today we're moving on to the last two winds of conflict. Number three is competition. Now, as much as we enjoy rooting for our favorite sports teams, sometimes, right, and being involved in like a competitive card game, the problem arises when we live our lives in competition with others. I'm sure you've heard about the man who boasted, "My wife and I often laugh about how competitive we are, but I laugh more." Yeah. The purpose of a relationship is to love and support one another, not to compare and diminish. Competition is grounded in the need to win, the need to be right, the need to appear better than. And the danger of this in human relationships is, in order for someone to win, someone else has to do what? Lose, absolutely. And how do we feel as the loser? We even have a name for it, the loser. Disappointed, diminished, angry, resentful, not good, right? So the Simmons have an interesting theory, and this is that the winner also loses because the reward for winning is the reinforcement of one's sense of insecurity. In other words, anytime we look outside ourselves for fulfillment or worth, we are looking in all the wrong places. Reverend Jane says, "Who do you have to be in order to need to be right or need to win? You have to be insecure, fearful, and inadequate. Needing to prove your worth is really just a way of masking low self-esteem." When we feel that need to judge, compare, compete with one another, we are not showing up connected to our wholeness. Reverend Ellen Davenport calls this the treacherous voice of comparison, and it can be a treacherous voice. I can remember my mother telling me when I was a child, you can always find somebody with more or less money. You can always find somebody with more or less brains, beauty, and things that you have. So what's the point? What's the point? The more we exert our energy trying to make ourselves look good in comparison to others, the less we hear our own soul's call. New Thought minister Reverend Michael Beckwith says, we can become so fragmented that when we walk into a new situation, the first question we ask ourselves, either consciously or maybe unconsciously, is, how can I navigate this situation so I'm looking good? Right? Here's what's underneath that question, probably. How can I navigate this situation so that people will not see my flaws, my faults, my unworthiness? When we claim our true identity as individualized expressions of the divine, then a new question arises, and it is, how can I genuinely offer my heart in this situation? Right here, right now, how can I be who I have come here to be? In our hearts, we understand that we're all one, and there's no need to compete to have our needs met. In this universe, there's no lack, only abundance, more than enough to go around. Remember our study of the art of abundance. So in any situation, we can ask ourselves, is my response, my behavior, driven by fear that there is not enough or I am not enough? Or is it driven by love, strength, power, and the peace that I have come here to be? If I'm in my head, I'm worried that I'm not enough, and I'm motivated by unfounded fear. When, however, I move from my head to my heart, the Christ center, the eye of the storm, I will discover the guidance I need to be who I am supposed to be, which is my purpose, the third characteristic of wholeness. Now, Reverend Jane defines purpose as the universe's intention through each one of us to be the presence of God. If we're living from anything else less than that, she says, conflict will arise from within us because we are expressing who we are not. And here's the thing. Our worthiness is not mirrored by outer standards, but by our ability to be the avenue of God's expression. When we truly know our worth, we will make the difference that we are here to make. Now, if that sounds impossible to you, and it does sound like a high bar, doesn't it? It might be because, as Reverend Gary says, unless your parents were Mary and Joseph, you probably were not told you were a child of God, right? In fact, some of us, myself included, were told exactly the opposite. I loved your song today, Bodhi. That's perfect about that. So the truth is, all of us, no exceptions, arrived on this earth fully equipped with all we need to make a difference. So why isn't everyone doing that? The problem is we forget our true identity and we confuse our life experiences with who we are. We are not our experiences. We are so much more. If we let a relationship, as wonderful as our relationships can be, but if we let a relationship determine our worthiness, what happens when the relationship ends? If we allow a profession, a job, or a title to define us, what happens when the job is no longer ours? One of my good friends called me recently on the moment of her retirement, and she said to me, "So who am I now?" And if we let our possessions, our things, our stuff define us, we will eventually discover that none of them endure. Remember, Jesus said, "Do not store up for yourself treasures on the earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves will break in and steal." Looking outside of ourselves for fulfillment means we are in not enough consciousness, and guess what? We will never be fulfilled. Our wholeness is our most precious possession, our identity, our true essence. When Jesus said, "Be ye perfect," what did the word perfect really mean? Does anybody remember? Well, I'm doing a great job up here, aren't I? I need hope. She would remember. Okay. It doesn't mean without fault as we think of perfect today, but it means whole and complete, whole and complete. In the words of Rumi, You have no idea how hard I've looked for a gift to bring to you. Nothing seemed right. What's the point of bringing you gold when you are the gold mine? Of water when you are the ocean? Everything I came up with was like taking spices to the Orient. It's no good giving my heart and soul to you because you already have these. So I brought you a mirror. Look at yourself and remember. And in the Gospel of Thomas, we read, if you bring forth that which is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth that which is in you, what you do not bring forth will curse you. We are here not to hide our lights under a bushel. We are on this earth to bring forth our divine gifts to bless the world. When we claim our full Christ identity, we say yes to our divine purpose to be God's expression. And we bring Christ's love, peace, harmony, and joy to every, yes, every situation. Jane tells the story of a real estate agent traveling through the countryside when she came upon an absolutely beautiful farm. So she stopped and talked to the farmer, saying, "You have the most magnificent farm here I've ever seen." She was a religious person, a spiritual person, and so she said, ended by saying, "God has done such a great thing here." Well, the old farmer paused and thought for a minute and scratched his head and finally replied, "Well, I guess that's right, but you should have seen this place before when God had it all by himself." So, the point is, we are here to be the hands and hearts of the divine in action, to express those divine ideas on this earth. Every challenge, every personal interaction is an opportunity for us to shift our awareness to this question: what is my purpose in this situation? As Robert Byrne wrote, the purpose of life is a life of purpose. So this brings us to the last wind of conflict and its pathway to peace, and it is defensiveness. One of our C words is connectedness, right? Well, when challenges appear in our lives, if we don't feel our divine connectedness, our reaction is to flee, avoid, or become defensive. In our human skins, we love to be in control. Has anybody noticed that? It's something we love to do. Jane notes that needing to have things in a certain way can shut down the creative process. Quantum physics tells us that at any given moment, there are an infinite number of possibilities about what can occur. And when we insist on one specific outcome, the field collapses and the other possibilities vanish. You may have heard the story about a battleship captain who saw a blip on the radar screen that a ship was very close to theirs. So he immediately sent a message, "Change course 10 degrees south. The return message came back, "No, you change course 10 degrees north. The captain radioed back, "I am a captain. Change course 10 degrees south now." The reply was, "I'm a seaman first class. Move 10 degrees north now." Well, the captain could not believe the audacity of this underclassman, and he said, "I am a battleship." Immediately he received the response, "I am a lighthouse." Reverend Jane asks, "Have you ever tried to move a lighthouse?" I have, I admit it. What we resist persists, and no one wins. When we get defensive, we just bring up the defensiveness in others. The more we battle negativity, the more power we give to it. Think about the war on drugs, the war on poverty, the war on terror, now the war on the coronavirus. As Emily Cady writes in Lessons in Truth, don't tell the world what you are against. Stand up and tell the world what you are for. Instead of fighting against a temporary condition, we can shine the light of truth on the situation, and the need to be defensive disappears. Lao Tzu said, "What is of all things most yielding can overcome that which is most hardened." Imagine a large rock in a fast-moving river. Which will wear down first, the rock or the water? The rock. because even though the rock is heavier and stronger than the water, its constant resistance against the movement wears it down. It's like swimming upstream. Going with the flow is more productive and can take us on remarkable journeys. There's a Zen story about a monk who was journeying to a distant town. In order to reach his destination, he had to follow a rushing river. So all was going well until suddenly the banks of the river overflowed and he was pulled into the rapid current. He struggled and struggled to no avail. Finally, he stopped struggling and just let the current pull him along. He had no other choice, he felt. Interestingly, it deposited him right in the town he had been traveling to reach. He thought, the river brought me here sooner than I would have made it if I had walked. And that's what our lives are like. When we let go and let the divine power work, all unfolds perfectly. So the fourth characteristic is wholeness. And that of wholeness, is non-resistance, going with the flow. Jane notes that this is the contact point between the field of infinite possibilities and our need, our particular need, in a situation. And when we are non-resistant, we allow infinite possibilities to flow through us. Living from defenselessness is at the heart of living from wholeness. Bodhi just shared a story with me this morning that he was feeling the intention that he wanted to move back to Florida so that he could be with his daughter and see her through high school, and he just gave it up. He didn't pick out any church. He didn't make any plans. He just gave it up, released it to the universe, and guess what happened? A church out of the blue contacted Bodhi, and now he is moving back to Florida. So that's the way it works. Thank you for being a personal story today, Bodhi. That's great. The thing is, though, it's not always easy. Sometimes it's really hard to give that up, to just be in the flow. Something has to change, really, in how we see the situation, which we talked about last week. Reverend Jane reminds us that change is nature's mechanism for renewal. She says, this is beautiful, since everything is in a state of becoming, developing, and transforming, then change and movement are the dance of life, the heartbeat of the universe. Now that may be beautiful, however, for every single change, there is a potential for conflict. And guess the origin of that conflict. Anybody guess? Yes, it's not in the change itself, it is in our reaction to it, our response to it, I should say. A Chinese proverb says, when the winds of change blow, some people build walls and others build windmills. So during the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. It's Gandhi who's given credit for the saying, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth makes the world blind and toothless. And that's all it accomplishes. Bible scholar Reverend Ed Townley says, this primitive form of justice based on retribution and ego survival was sufficient for a time when humankind was in wilderness consciousness. But Jesus is taking the disciples and us to a new dimension of spiritual understanding, that as we grow into the full expression of our divine identity, we must embrace a new perspective. Resist not error, turn the other cheek, certainly does not mean to allow ourselves to become victim of abuse. Metaphysically, it can mean to use our spiritual vision, as we said last week, to see it differently. It means to turn away from appearances of limitation, to enfold ourselves in light and love, and bring every negative interaction there. We gently then dissolve resentments by the light of our true essence. Martin Luther King, a pioneer of non-resistance, said, darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. This means in the face of darkness, we are to be the light. In the face of hatred, we are to be love. In the face of discord, we are to be peace. And as Reverend Jane writes, For all the fighting and resisting we might do, it's only ourselves that we work against. Thoughts and actions not aligned with who we have come here to be block the divine flow. We are here to be, as Charles Fillmore wrote, all that we can imagine God to be. Through the practice of non-resistance, we let no person interfere with our divine purpose. We embrace life fully, all experiences of life, allowing them to simply pass by, knowing that life's conflicts are opportunities for us to return to our wholeness, to ask ourselves, what am I to be in this situation? Paraphrasing Franciscan priest Father Richard Rohr, so we in our communal wholeness are the glory of God, the goodness of God, the presence of God. In our connectedness together, we rise above the little events of life to the consciousness of being itself, the great mind of Christ. This is who we have come here to be, and so it is.